Volatility in the market is a fact. What isn't so clear is what the ups and downs of the market can do to your retirement portfolio. For answers, call Kevin Brooker at 800-975-6717. Kevin is founder and CEO of Silverleaf Financial, and he's been helping people cut through the noise and create a retirement and income plan that can take you all the way through retirement. Call now for your free financial consultation, 800-975-6717. Today's market volatility can really take a toll on your portfolio. But what if you could lock in your gains and still be in a position to participate in the gains without suffering losses if the market plunges again? That's what Kevin Brooker at Silverleaf Financial can help you achieve. Your no-cost analysis includes a portfolio x-ray showing any hidden fees in your current plan. He'll show you how by claiming Social Security at the right time can make a huge difference in your retirement income. Call Kevin Brooker today, 800-975-6717. Do it today.
This is Kevin Brooker. Welcome to Cruising Through Retirement. You know, you think your retirement spending might follow a straight line? Well, you might want to think again, because J.P. Morgan did a study of over 5 million retirees, and they uncovered three very surprising patterns that could really change how you plan. So today, we want to help you get ahead of the curve with some smart and flexible strategies tailored to real life.
You found Cruising Through Retirement with Kevin Brooker. Kevin is an investment advisor representative with more than 30 years' experience. He's helped thousands of people cruise through retirement, and he'd be happy to help you too. Stick around for today's adventure on Cruising Through Retirement.
Welcome in. Cruising Through Retirement's the show. Kevin Brooker's here, as he is each and every week. Kevin's been helping folks for, well, better than 30 years. He is an investment advisor representative. Silverleaf Financial is where you find him. SilverleafFinancial.com. And so much more. Hey, it's Thursday, so I know we record on Thursdays. So
yes.
I'm excited to, this is my favorite show of the week. It's my last one, and I like it.
You know what? I look forward to the end of the week as well. And I appreciate that, Steve. And it is always good to be here. Guys, the stock market, if you've been following the markets lately, you know, we've recouped all those losses that we got from the tariff tantrums that we had in early April when the market sold off almost 20%. We have made virtually all of that back. And I'm here to tell you right now that I think you should take a look at it. If you got concerned, if you were anxious, feeling like you shouldn't have been taking so much risk when the market was down, right? When it was down. If you felt uneasy or anxious, it'd be a good idea to take a look at your portfolio, see if you can scale back the risk a little bit. I would suggest it now. I think this rally is looking tired. And to me, it looks like, you know, we should see some weakness here coming up in the next couple of weeks. It's always impossible to know exactly when. But we're bumped up against 5990 on the S&P 500, I believe four times in the last few days. And so it doesn't seem to be able to break through. So that's where we're at right now. Now we got this feud breaking out with Musk and Trump. And, it's the first time Musk has said something in quite a while that I actually loved hearing.
Yeah.
First time in a long time saying that this bill is neither big nor beautiful. It is big, but it's not beautiful. And
right.
And saying, what did he call it? A disgusting abomination.
I think that was it. Yep.
And says it's going to bankrupt the country. And guys, if you've been listening to the show, that's the same thing I've been saying for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks.
And, yes, sir.
And unfortunately, you know, we got to reach out to our congressmen and women. And well, at this point, it's in the hands of the Senate. The House backed it, and then, of course, Green from, I call her Gonorrhea Green. Anyway, I'm not a fan. She came out and said that if she'd have known this was in there, she wouldn't have signed the bill. And so I say, what the hell? It's your only job, and you can't even read the bill that you're signing that's going to impact the lives of millions of Americans around the country. But yet you say you're this upstanding person that's representing your constituents. You can't even take the time to read the bill. So, listen, I know this isn't a political show, but the reality, guys, is that there's a lot of things in this bill that will affect your investments.
Yep.
And there's a lot of things they're trying to do. They're trying to make the executive branch much stronger. They're trying to weaken the judiciary. but they're not talking about that, right? They're looking at borrowing additional trillions of dollars, and I'm worried that we're not going to see anywhere near the growth that they're forecasting, because in my mind, if you're raising prices through these tariffs, to me, it either has to result in inflation or it has to result in the companies eating more of the tariff, which means their profit margins are going down, which means earnings estimates have to come down, which means the stock market would likely follow. Or we have stagflation, where we have slower growth, higher inflation. That's not good for the market either. So the market multiples we're looking at with the bond interest rates that we have, we've got a 10-year treasury just under 4.5. We've got a 30-year at 4.8 or so, just bouncing up against 5. At those level of interest rates, the valuation on the market is pretty rich. In my opinion, it's too high. So something needs to give. Either interest rates need to start to come down, or we need valuations to increase. But again, somebody needs to tell me, if you guys know the answer, how do we not have companies lowering profit margins due to having them in, having to eat the tariff, okay, versus raising prices, which would result in inflation for the consumer? How is it not one of those?
Well, so I think, how can it not be one of those?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know how it can. I think it's both. I think it's the answer, because I think a lot of companies are going to try to keep down the cost, and sure they're going to try to stay quiet. They're going to try not to piss off the guy in the White House, because they don't want to be subject to his insults and his ire and everything else that comes with it, another temper tantrum. So, and I can't say that I blame them, you know, because if you look at Tesla this week on this today, Thursday, stock dropped about $50 in an hour, hour and a half. And that was right after the SPAT, the SPAT became public. Trump actually, he was surprisingly quiet the last couple of days, considering how he lashes out at anybody that disagrees with him pretty much immediately.
Yes.
The fact that he waited a couple of days to respond to Musk, I think was his handlers telling him, stay quiet. Stay the hell quiet. He's the richest guy in the world. And you might not have gotten elected if it wasn't for him. So Musk has 200 million followers. So now the question is, where is the public sentiment going to go on this bill? And if they gave me a vote, I would say hell no. And I think they need to let taxes rise, and they need to impose higher taxes on the wealthy and rich people. That's my opinion. But let's go back to what we can do to deal with this. Guys, one thing that I'm worried about, the reason I'm talking about it is because if the debt service payments are going to continue to go higher because we're borrowing more money and interest rates have moved higher. So that means the money we have to allocate to servicing the debt is approaching 20% of our total budget. 20%.
Wow.
Just to pay the interest on the debt. And so as those interest payments go higher, right, what do you have to do in your household if you've got to pay more to pay your credit card payments? You've got to come up with the money from someplace else, right? So that's why I'm afraid of what's going to happen. If they keep going down this path, then when the Social Security Trust Fund reserves, when the excess is gone, then we've got about a 25% shortfall. In other words, the money coming in from payroll taxes, income taxes, taxes on Social Security, which is something else they wanted to get rid of, right?
Mm-hmm.
The tax on Social Security is about 4% of the budget for Social Security. So by eliminating that tax, you're making that program go broke even sooner. And I don't think I can't imagine people are thinking about this, or maybe you don't care if your check gets cut 25% in 8 or 9 years. I don't know, but I would suggest we budget and we plan as though it could actually happen, because they're not even talking about Social Security. They're not even talking about fixing Social Security or Medicare. All they're talking about is giving tax breaks to super rich people and cutting Medicaid. So I think. In my opinion, it's very scary looking out more than, I don't know, 10 years. So I feel very bad for the future generations. I think they're the ones, kids and grandkids are the ones that are going to be paying for this. And I think the people in Congress and in Washington should be freaking ashamed of themselves, personally.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that we talk about when we're going into retirement, right? We've talked before about when most people retire, you know, let's say the average age 65.
Yep.
We typically call that first 8 or 10 years the go-go years, right?
And because that's what we want to do. That's what I want to do.
That's what you want to do, right? Most people want to travel. You know, some people want to travel, you know, far and wide and go to Australia and Which I would love to go to Australia, but man, that is a long flight.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
I mean, that's a long one. But traveling is very expensive, right? Mm-hmm. It does make sense, though, from a health standpoint, that you plan to travel and you do it in those early years, right? Because it's probably going to be much easier for you to take that trip to Europe, you know, when you're 67 or 68 versus 78, right? Or 88. So I think that what makes sense to me is the idea of a fund that you kind of put on this, call it a fund?
A fun fund. I like it.
A fun fund. All right. So this is money that you separate, that's separate from your retirement funds. Okay. So in an ideal world, I'm going to say you've got your emergency fund is all built and taken care of. I'm going to say you've got all your debts paid for. You don't even have a mortgage. Your cars are paid for. You pay off your credit cards every month. You have no debt. Right. And then I'm going to say you've got a retirement fund set up that's paying you guaranteed income every month that you can rely on. And that, in addition to your other sources of income, covers all your bills, right? So you've got everything covered on a living expense basis. Now on the other side, you've got a separate account that's your fun fund, okay? So you can use this, you can use it for travel, for buying big gifts for the grandkids, or for, I don't know, the country club dues, or
sure.
Whatever you want to do that you enjoy doing, you've got it in a separate account. So you can keep that account separate. And to me, it helps from a psychological standpoint, reducing or eliminating the worry that you're having fun is going to hurt your retirement in the future.
Right. Oh, I see that. That makes perfect sense.
So I want to separate those. And I say here, I don't know what it is, 50 grand. Put 50 grand in your fun account or whatever mm-hmm. the number might be. Maybe it's 500 grand. I don't know. Yeah. Obviously it's going to be different for different people, different lifestyles. But I think by doing it that way, it's segregated. And you can give yourself the freedom, the right, or however you want, the privilege of having a good time, right? And not being free from anxiety and worrying that you're going to impact your retirement because that's already taken care of, okay? So that's how I would suggest to do it. And chances are, you're going to want to spend that money in the first several years of retirement because most people, once they get to their mid-70s, they don't feel like being so active anymore. So it's so we go from go-go years to we call them the slow-go years.
Yes.
Okay? And that's probably another decade, right? And so what we see, though, and what I'm getting back to is the J.P. Morgan study. Now, they analyzed the spending patterns and the spending habits of 5 million customers at J.P. Morgan Chase, right? Obviously, mm-hmm. obviously, they've got a lot of credit cards. They're the biggest bank in the country, if not the world. And so I think that's a very good – I think they've got a tremendous amount of customer data that they can look at. So I think it's a highly credible source is what I'm saying.
Sure. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Right? And so,
but I think it's interesting what that showed or what they developed and what they – you know, what the takeaways are.
Oh, I think it very much could be because what they're saying, if you assume your spending is going to be flat or just rise with inflation, you're probably going to find that that's not the case, right? And the first thing that they talk about is figuring out what type of a person you are. In other words, are you one of these like a steady Eddie person that you spend the same amount of money, you know, every single month? That's very consistent. Or are you more the up and down, the roller coaster type?
Sure.
Right? And I'll confess, in my 30s, I was the roller coaster. No question about it. And the problem that I had was both my spending was on a roller coaster, and in my case, my income was on a roller coaster.
So
it could get pretty crazy sometimes. And after I got tired of it being so crazy, that's when I gradually got things more compressed and became more of a steady eddy where I've been at for the last handful of years. And, so I think that it makes it much easier if the patterns are similar, because it's easier to budget, it's easier to plan, you know. So you got to figure out which type of person you are, because if you're more of the roller coaster, then you got to allow for that by having a bigger fun fund. Or having excess money so that you can deal, so that if you have a shortfall 1 month, or if you spend too much money 1 month, that you can take it from someplace that does not impact your retirement, right? And so that's, to me, what it's all about, is figuring out your mentality and your psychology, and it does take some introspection, right? And, you know, looking inside yourself and figuring out what type of person you are, you know? And I think there's some people that don't do enough of that, to be honest. I tell you what, take a psychology class or two, and it's going to have you doing it all the time.
Yep.
So anyway, I took more than my share of psych classes in college. All right, but then we get into so the slow go years, you're probably not going to be spending as much money on travel, right, as you did in the go go years, and as you get older, what they found at J.P. Morgan is that your spending by the time you're in your 80s, it's we call these the no go years, mm-hmm. Maybe the late 80s, and that's a time when you're probably not going to be doing much traveling. Most people at that point just stay at home. They stay at home a lot of times. I do see them at the gym though. I've got there's a woman that's 93 years old, still lives independently, goes to the gym every day, and she's totally mobile, she's totally cogent, and in my mind that's a huge win. If you've got both your mind and your body in your 90s, you won the game for sure.
So, exactly, you won the game.
You win. Give me my trophy. All right. So what we've noticed going back to the J.P. Morgan study is that there tends to be a spike in spending those first handful of years. So the first 5, 6, 7 years, the spending does tend to accelerate because people, they finally feel free. You know, every hour is happy hour and every day is Saturday, right?
Yep, of course.
And so it's, which I am very much looking forward to. And so, but you're probably going to see a boost in spending right when, you know, the first few years after retire. And that's something else that you want to tell yourself by having the money segregated, that you're not going to lead to guilt because of feeling like you're straining your portfolio or you're draining your retirement fund, because you might feel like you overspent, you know? And so to me, it's really a big help having a separate fund that I can look at and say, that's my fund. I'm good, right? And it's not going to impact my retirement. I don't have to worry about it. I'm just going to enjoy myself.
Yeah.
And so that's that to me, that's my suggestion for coming up for how to handle, you know, giving yourself the authority, the freedom, the right to do what you want to do, right? And
yeah.
and to just relax and enjoy yourself. And that's what I tell people a lot of times. I have found a lot of clients, we've talked about it before, Steve, is that a lot of people, because you get into this mode when you're younger that you want to discipline yourself to save.
Yes.
And so for decades and decades, you're religiously, you know, with very much discipline, you're putting your money away, you're saving your money, you're building that rainy day fund, you're contributing to the 401k, saving in the retirement accounts. And you do that for, what, 40 years? And then somebody like me is going to get sit down with you and say, you know what, Steve, it's okay if you spend some of that money.
Yeah, that's a challenge sometimes for people, isn't it?
It, you know, it really is. It's actually one that has surprised me. And there's a fair amount of people that I believe genuinely have trouble giving themselves the permission to spend the money. They've been staunch, you know, about saving. And so it's hard to make that. Sometimes some people have a hard time making the psychological transition, right, to where it's okay to spend, because ultimately, in my mind, it comes back to a fear of running out of money. That, as far as I've seen, and all the people that I've talked to, in 3.5 decades of doing this, the biggest fear retirees have is running out of money. It's not dying. That's not the biggest fear. Okay, a lot of people think it's dying. But it's not. In fact, most people, I've met a lot of people who aren't worried about that at all. Wouldn't even make the top 10.
Right.
But, you know, being confined to a facility would be in the top 2 or 3, right? Running out of money is number one. And so if we have these accounts set up where they're designated for specific purposes, obviously, like I said, I want to start with the emergency fund. I want to make sure you're covered if the air conditioner breaks, the car breaks down, right? Whatever unexpected, you know, 10 grand expense comes up. I want to make sure it doesn't derail you. And so that's always the first thing I suggest everybody set up back in your 20s, right? And then we'll go through, we've talked about setting up an income plan, right? So you can generate the income you need. I recommend getting it from a very steady source, like a guaranteed fixed interest rate, or perhaps an annuity payment that's guaranteed for a lifetime. One thing annuities don't get enough credit for is the fact that they're the only account that will keep paying you even if it goes to zero. They don't get enough credit for that.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
It's a huge, huge deal, right? If you've got longevity in your family, man, you should really consider an annuity. I'm not saying I would never tell anyone put every penny you have into annuities. You want to think of it as one tool in the toolbox. That's what it is. Okay? If you thought it made sense to buy insurance for your car in case your car breaks down and you're paying money to the insurance company every month, every 6 months, a lot of times nothing happened, right?
Right.
Did you waste that money?
No.
I don't think it's wasted. I think you turned the risk over to the insurance company, and in exchange for the insurance company covering that risk, you paid them a fee. That's the same thing you're doing when you pay for a lifetime income rider with an annuity. You're turning over the risk of running out of money to the insurance company, and in exchange for that, you're paying them a fee. You're paying a fee so that they guarantee you that payment that will pay you even if the account goes to zero. That's what you're doing. It's a risk-reducing strategy is how I look at it. Just like if you have insurance on your home, most, I'd say 95% of people have homeowners insurance. I know there's more and more that don't these days because it's gotten so expensive in places like California and Florida.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of people without mortgages are choosing to, quote-unquote, self-insure. And that works great until you have a disaster.
Until it doesn't.
Until it doesn't, right? And you know, the thing is, I know some people in Flagstaff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Northern Arizona, a lot of people don't know this. Northern Arizona has a higher risk of wildfire. It's in the worst 4% in the country.
Oh, my gosh.
It's got a higher wildfire risk than 96% of the rest of the country, okay? And so, in other words, there's a good chance your house is going to get caught on fire. But yet I have people up there that I know that are, you know, I don't know if I'd say wealthy, but they're very comfortable. And they chose to stop paying for homeowners insurance, which I thought was... To me, it's a little bit crazy because I say, if you can afford it, why would you stop paying for it? You know, if it's not impacting your life, they just felt, you know what? We've lived here 10 years. We've never had a problem. I say, you know what? I've lived here 15 years. I've never had a problem. So, and I hope I live another 15 with no problems.
Yeah, right.
You know, and so
but
to
if
me,
there is a problem, I want to be covered.
You know what? I want to have that coverage. Now I raised my deductibles because I got annoyed when they raised my homeowner's insurance premium. I'm saying,
yep.
You know, and I did think about, I actually spoke to my agent. I'm not a PNC, I'm not a property and casualty guy. So I have an agent that I buy the insurance from. And of course he recommended that I don't do it. But then he said, you know what? You can lower the cost by raising the deductible. So, which is what I did, you know, because personally, like with my, fortunately me and my wife, we're in good health, good shape. So I get a very high deductible health insurance plan because typically we don't need anything other than just, you know, seeing a doctor for an exam or a, you know, wellness check or whatever they call it. You know, we don't really need anything beyond that. And so I got a high deductible because I don't think anything's going to come up. I just have it because I'm worried about a catastrophe. I'm concerned if something happens that we wind up in the hospital, you can have a $100,000 bill in the hospital in a matter of a day or two. So that's why I have the insurance. And so I look at the same thing with homeowners policies is, you know, if you're thinking about canceling it, maybe just raise the deductible. Maybe,
yeah, that's what a great suggestion.
Right? Because that way you still have coverage for the catastrophe. Okay? So if you got like a $500 deductible, maybe make it $5,000. All right? I mean, depending on your emergency fund, if you've got an emergency fund where you have 6 months of expenses, then you can afford a $5,000 deductible. Right? And so that's how I look at it, because the likelihood of an event occurring is very, like where we are in the valley in Arizona. One thing we're fortunate, you know, it does get hot, okay?
Yeah, sure it does.
And yes, there's 100 days over 100. That's a fact, all right? But the good news, we don't generally get hit with natural disasters, all right? We don't have tornadoes. We don't have hurricanes. We don't have earthquakes. It's the desert, so we don't really have wildfires here. You know, there's not a lot of trees, okay? So
that's right.
So you know, so it doesn't happen, right? You know, but if you're looking at trying to lower your insurance bills, I got a little sidetracked, but what I'm saying is take a look at ways you can lower the premium by raising the deductible and changing some of the limits, if those make sense to do. But that way you're not at least entirely without coverage, all right?
Right.
So we want to make sure you keep an eye on these things. And guys, you should. And one thing I do want to suggest, since I'm on a tangent here with insurance rates are jumping ridiculously fast. And the state of California, in fact, just approved another 20%, I believe it was, increase in premiums.
For homeowners?
For homeowners, yeah.
Wow. That's
because terrible. Because State Farm came back and said and showed them how much money they lost. And they're way in the hole versus the premium. How much, in other words, how much they've had to pay out for all the fires versus how much they brought in premiums, they are way in the hole. And insurance companies have to show these things. They have to show their books to the regulators because it's the state insurance regulators that give them the yes or no. In other words, they have to give them permission to raise the premiums and by whatever percentages they're asking for.
Right.
In order to justify it, they have to show on the books. So the reality is everything's gotten more expensive. And so the sucky part about it, I told my wife, I said, yeah, we might not live there, but we're going to get hit by this too. Because what these insurance companies are going to do is they're going to raise the prices across the board to bring in more money because they're losing money because of these natural disasters. And I really want to ask people, if you're in one of these disaster-prone areas, if something happens, could you please move? Move someplace that's not subject to a disaster. All right? It kills me that we're spending public taxpayer money rebuilding areas that repeatedly get hit with disasters. I'm talking about New Orleans. So I think if somebody wants to live in a high-risk area, you should be on the hook for it by yourself.
Well,
The public should not be on the hook to cover a disaster in a disaster-prone area. I think it's ridiculous. So anyway, but we're all going to pay for higher premiums, just like we do pay for higher medical insurance premiums because we've got so many, you know, we've got so many health problems in this country. I cite obesity, heart disease.
That's a big one.
Right? Yeah, literally. Stroke. That's you heard over 50% of teenagers are now taking Wegovy. I mean,
cut it off. Why?
Apparently.
Wow.
Apparently they don't like being overweight.
Well, that's a good thing, I guess, but I didn't realize that. Holy cow.
I just heard that.
A whole movement.
I just saw that report yesterday. And I have mixed feelings on it, I'll admit, but I also know that it's contributed to a big increase in our medical costs. That's just reality. So if we become healthier as a nation, one way or the other, that should lower our healthcare costs. Which should hopefully keep our premiums from you know, they're not going to go down, but maybe they don't rise as fast. So on a final thought on the spending across different patterns, now remember, some of these fluctuations, as you're spending more in your 60s and 70s and spending less in your 80s, it is possible, of course, that your healthcare costs are going to go up as time goes by, not because you necessarily are consuming more healthcare services, but because the costs just go up over time. And in the case of healthcare, they go up at a faster rate than inflation. So you could be using the same amount of services, paying quite a bit more from it in your 80s and your 70s, simply due to the inflation of healthcare. So what I wanted to remind everybody is that one of the things we need to do when we're planning for income, we've got to build in inflation hedges, okay? So we've got to build in ways to either grow your portfolio to offset inflation in the future, or we've got to set up separate accounts. You know, one thing I've suggested to some people is setting money up on, I call them ladders. You can build a bond ladder where you buy different bonds at different maturities. So maybe a one that matures in 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years, 10 years, something like that. You can do it with CDs where you build a ladder where they mature at different dates. You could do it with annuities. It's all the same principle, but the idea being to have something maturing every year or every 2 years so that you can then take advantage of current interest rates and the current economic environment and make the best investment at that point. Because, you know, it changes day to day and year to year, right?
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of building ladders with your funds as well. And that's also a good way to hedge. So, you know what, I've got a CD coming due in 3 years. That's going to give me an extra, you know, I don't know, 50 grand or 100 grand or whatever it is that you can use to live off of. And so there's a lot of different ways we can tackle it. But we all know that inflation is going to be there over time. We know our expenses are not necessarily going to be the same every month. But by setting up that fund and segregating it, you know you've got your money in a separate bucket that you can tap whenever and however you want to.
Sure.
And it's not going to impact your retirement. So I think that'll give you much more peace of mind.
Sure. And again, so as you kind of started talking about the market and where it is, so now, I mean, it's been a couple weeks that things have kind of leveled off. Is that fair?
Yes, that is fair. In fact,
well, you said we've recovered much of what we lost.
Oh, we did. We're within, gosh, I want to say within 2, maybe 3% of the high. Now, bear in mind, foreign markets have been doing, you know, like European markets have been doing fantastic, far, far better than the U.S.
Wow. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, part of it's because they're not going through the tariff nonsense that we're going through. They are, indirectly, I guess. But they just lowered, I believe the ECB just lowered interest rates by a quarter point. The Fed's in a terrible spot. They really can't do anything because Trump has created too much uncertainty. All right. There's too much uncertainty with there's a tariff now, there's not a tariff. Today is 25%, tomorrow is 50%, then it's 135%.
Yeah,
now
I know. It's just crazy.
It's all this whipsaw, man. It's all this back and forth. I think I'm going to say I think he's an egomaniac and he wants to be the center of attention 24/7. And
hey.
That's why he – do you know he's put out over 2,300 posts in his first, 13 weeks or something? He's posting all the time. He always wants to be in the spotlight.
Yep.
And I think that ties into why he wanted to do this. I think he just loves being in the spotlight and he wants to be in control. But the fact is, we haven't signed any deals. There's been no deal signed, right? And so my problem is, I don't know what to believe when he says something. I don't know what to believe, and I don't know how anybody else knows what to believe, because he's, you know, I've called him a pathological liar, and I believe that's 100% true. COVID was not a Democratic hoax. He did not end the war in Ukraine in the first 24 hours. He didn't finish building the wall, I don't think, right? Mexico sure as hell didn't pay for it. And of course he didn't win the election. So I think it's very difficult to know what to believe when you have a dishonest person speaking it. And so that to me has added to the uncertainty. That's why I'm still very much in cash. I'm in the market, but I've got a big cash position because I do think that the summer is going to see weakness. They've some of the tariffs go until, I want to say, July 9th or 10th is the deadline. And I know he changed China so many times. I think they've got until August, but I, to be honest, I can't keep it straight anymore. So to me, there's so much uncertainty. I don't think it makes sense to add risk. I think it's a great time to lower risk, especially if you felt uncomfortable when the market was selling off. If you would like a second opinion, guys, I'd be happy to give you a second opinion. There's no charge or obligation. Just go to my website, silverleaffinancial.com, and you can set up a 10-minute phone call directly from my website, and it links to my calendar, so it's a live link. And if you have any questions, feel free to let me know.
Provided this for illustrative purposes only and does not constitute investment, tax, or legal advice. The covered material has been obtained from sources that are deemed to be reliable, but their accuracy and completeness cannot be guaranteed. There are risks associated with every type of investment vehicle. Please read the prospectus and risk disclosure thoroughly before investing. Insurance guarantees are subject to the insurance company's ability to pay. Neither Silverleaf Financial, Kevin Brooker, host, and guests are responsible for the usage of information discussed. Security and investment services offered through Silverleaf Financial, member SPINRA SIPC. Please consult with an experienced advisor before making any investment decisions.
Volatility in the market is a fact. What isn't so clear is what the ups and downs of the market can do to your retirement portfolio. For answers, call Kevin Brooker at 800-975-6717. Kevin is founder and CEO of Silverleaf Financial, and he's been helping people cut through the noise and create a retirement and income plan that can take you all the way through retirement. Call now for your free financial consultation, 800-975-6717. Today's market volatility can really take a toll on your portfolio. But what if you could lock in your gains and still be in a position to participate in the gains without suffering losses if the market plunges again? That's what Kevin Brooker at Silverleaf Financial can help you achieve. Your no-cost analysis includes a portfolio x-ray showing any hidden fees in your current plan. He'll show you how by claiming Social Security at the right time can make a huge difference in your retirement income. Call Kevin Brooker today, 800-975-6717. Do it today.